And we are back, day six of former President Trump's criminal trial in New York, and it has wrapped up for the day. This is Passover, of course, so they let the jurors leave early for anyone who celebrates this and anyone in the court, of course, who would need to have the afternoon off. A lot of interesting things happening in the courtroom today. We heard from the editor, the former editor of the National Enquirer, and had a little, and what he had to say about this catch and kill operation that they had going at the National Enquirer. And now the judge is weighing something very important. He's going to figure out, the prosecution has argued that the former president violated his gag order, and they want a ruling on this. So we're going to hear on this a little bit later, probably today. I'm not sure about that. The person who might know the answer to that is our next guest, Todd Flood, managing partner at Flood Law. Todd, always a pleasure to talk with you. We also want to promo the fact that you have a show here behind the bench on WJR the first Wednesday of every month, 7 p.m. Set your dial. So, Todd, this judge now is going to have to weigh whether or not the former president violated the gag order. Are we going to hear about that today, or is this going to be an ongoing consideration? How does this work?
Yeah, so Maria, always great being with you, and thanks for having me. I think you'll get some results today. The judge is in a tricky spot, I think. Yeah, you know, first and foremost, the prosecution is starting off with asking only for a civil fine, or a fine in this contempt, I should say, of $1,000, that's what the max is, per violation of the gag order. The defense is arguing it's, you know, constitutional free speech. He didn't violate the gag order. The judge obviously has strained himself against the defense here quite a bit in the first couple days. That being said, the tricky spot is this. Yeah, so $1,000 is minuscule to what Trump could, you know, he'd do it a gazillion times. What's the worst case scenario? The worst case scenario is does he attempt to throw him in jail? You know, because that would happen in an ordinary course of a regular defendant, but I think that would just be, you know, throwing some serious gasoline on his fire. And the outrage that would take place if that were to happen. So I don't see that. It's really a curious spot that he's in. The government has cited 10 different repostings or postings of comments Trump has made on jurors or witnesses and the like, which in turn, you know, it does it violate? Potentially, yes. But I just don't see how the punishment here, there's no way I could ever see this judge being crazy enough to throw him in jail. And the $1,000 fine is really nothing. You'll hear about the result with this episode today.
So we'll hear about it today. You know, as you were talking, it just reminded me, it flashed back in my head, when Kwame Kilpatrick was thrown in jail right in the middle of his legal troubles. I can't remember. I'd have to look it up. I can't remember the reason he was thrown in jail during the legal proceedings that were ongoing. He violated some court rule, and he was thrown in jail. Yeah. I remember covering that. It was a shock.
I was. That was the second where he violated his probation, and there was a different group of where he was contesting that he couldn't make a payment of a certain amount of money, and a different attorney, not the team that we had, put Kwame up on the stand, and Judge Groner, and he told, according to Judge Groner, a lie on the stand, mm-hmm. and then in mm-hmm. turn that put him into the jail. For the violation and then lying in front of the judge. So a little bit different circumstance, but that was
shocking, right?
Yeah, it was shocking. Yeah.
And so that, I mean, I don't know, anything could happen here, that's for sure. So today we also heard a lot from David Pecker, who was the CEO of American Media, former, owned the National Enquirer. He talked about this tactic known as the catch and kill, suppressing damaging stories. I know that I've asked you about this before. The jury hearing about this, I just wonder what their impressions are of that testimony.
You know, this is, I think, another slippery slope and definitely grounds that will be taken up on appeal. This is what is called 404B. It's the prior acts or motive operandi, if you will. It has nothing to do. It's not the substance of this case. They brought these catch and kills. They are not illegal. That's not a crime. But they're using it to show the conspiracy portion or the relationship with the National Enquirer. And the first one was, which was a untrue story, false made-up story, the person, the door person.
The doorman at the building.
Yeah, was telling that Trump had a child out of wedlock, which was proven to be false. So it was obviously a salacious story, and the National Enquirer, you know, went to Cohen. Cohen said, you know, check it out. And ultimately, they paid for that story. That's not illegal. That happens all the time to quell a story, stop a story, or whatever the case may be. But the National Enquirer bought it. Turned out to be false. But they're showing this backdrop of this relationship with this tabloid. It's not a it's not regular journalism. It's not anything of that sort. It's just a tabloid, and they bought it. It's very commonplace. I don't know what the jury's going to think. Right now, the jury's thinking, oh, wow, this is a pay-for-play scheme. Well, it's really not illegal. It happens all the time. I would love to be the defense attorney to cross-examine that witness on these issues. But it's salacious from the standpoint, you know, of what's going on.
That's exactly what I think I was getting at. Was it a salacious? I mean, the guy was paid. I have a figure of $30,000. I'm not sure if that's correct. But supposedly this person was paid $30,000. You know, there are people who might be sitting on that jury. I know not all of them, but there are, you know, a couple. That's a lot of money to them. And so I just wonder how this can chip away and erode in this case. And the kind of frame of mind it's going to put the jury in when they hear the rest of this evidence.
It, you know, obviously can taint them, but you have to be able to parse through those things as a defense attorney and make sure that they understand that this is something that happens oftentimes. And one, two, it's not the substance of this case. This is a case that deals with falsifying your business records by saying you had a retainer with an attorney and this expense was for a retainer, and then you have this federal hook over here on the other side of the page that you did this and you're doing this false reporting was ultimately to basically violate campaign finance fraud, the rules, in which case that's the federal crime. So, you know, I can see this case being a misdemeanor. It's going to be you really have to thread all the needles to make this a federal offense. I mean, a felony offense. And that's what the government's trying to do. They took the broad strokes, and now they're getting into the nitty-gritty. They're getting into the details. So it's kind of like the reverse pyramid. You know, you paint the picture, who you are, what your relationship is. Get into, you know, how Trump paid and, you know, how he did these things, and then start getting down to the nitty gritty of what the facts are that you have to prove for each element of the crime.
There is a lot. I mean, we are just at the tip of this case, right? I mean, we've got so much more to go. And we are looking for this afternoon what will happen with the judge, whether or not Trump is in contempt of court, that for 10 social media posts. Todd Flood, always a pleasure to talk with you.
My pleasure.
And once again, Todd has a show right here on WJR, the first Wednesday of the month, Behind the Bench. And we always love talking with Todd. He's always got great insight. Stay with us here on WJR. The Chris Renwick Show continues.